Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It's the Thursday on the Chuck Oliver Show, and hey, we're talking college football. It is what we do. Been doing it for 10 years. 9 states and 60 states is where you'll find us. Mac Brown, his first go-round, Chapel Hill, he won, and I mean big time, and boy, they played defense. And in fact, he won so much that he got the Texas job. The second go-round in Chapel Hill, he has not won enough, at least not by my estimation. 38-27 in his return as head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels. And he's had an NFL quarterback for every single one of those games. And so you're supposed to win more than that, I believe, I think. And he's sitting like right at that 8 wins a year thing. And that's good, but that's more than a good program. It's my opinion. And like I said, the thumb on the scale is I've got an NFL guy at quarterback, and it just seems it should be a little bit more than that. And I know he wants more, and he wants to get better on defense and everything else. We're going to cover it all from Tar Heel Illustrated. It's a rivals effort. Andrew Jones. Andrew, welcome to the Chuck Oliver Show. How you doing today, man?
Doing great, Chuck. It's good to be back with you.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. Give me your flyover. 5 years, and that's the record. And some of them are big wins and thumbs up to everybody involved. There was a bad Friday night against Virginia Tech. There were some wins against Mercer and Charlotte and whoever else. Give me your just measuring stick of the past 5 seasons.
I think you did a pretty good job. The one glaring thing that the media here talks about a lot is they've lost 11 conference games in which they were a touchdown or more favorite. And I think the rest of the league combined is in about that number. So they have this propensity to play well, really well for a stretch, and then get super fat and happy, and then just lay an egg. Last year, they lose at home to Virginia, which was inexplicable when they were 10th in the country and undefeated. And they don't regroup. The next week, they go up to Atlanta and give up 200-some yards rushing in the fourth quarter to Georgia Tech and lose that game. So there is a pattern that has taken place that needs to be fixed. And winning without an NFL quarterback this year will be the task, because I don't think anybody sees Max Johnson as an NFL guy. But I will say there are dudes that have stuck around college football a lot here the last few years that eventually became NFL guys. I don't think anybody thought Michael Penix was that guy when he was at Indiana, but now he is. So who knows what Max Johnson can do. But you're right. They haven't scaled a high enough mountain. They've been scaling hills. And Mac will tell you, you got to get the hill before you get the mountain. He's a master communicator at that stuff. And he'll tell you that they're a lot better now than when they took over. And he's absolutely right. But North Carolina football should be consistently better. And if he truly is on the track, then there's no excuse not to be at minimum 9 wins this year, or perhaps 10, or maybe even more, given what he's done, where else he's been previously in his career, given what his stated mission has been from day one, and also what you said. It's not good enough just yet. It needs to be better if Mac Brown, the Hall of Famer, is going to still be Mac Brown, the Hall of Famer in Chapel Hill.
All right. I kind of have a chuckle back in January. Nick Saban quit. He's like, I'm 72, and let me tell you why it's harder to do this at 72. And he starts talking about keeping up with the portal and all this. I was like, dude, I'm in my 50s in the media. Sing the praises, man. I was like, keeping up with the portal's killing me. Everything he said, though, about how hard it is to be 72 and a head coach in college football today, oh, that's true for Mac Brown, isn't it? Does that come up? Has Mac addressed it?
Yeah, he does, but the impression I get being around the program, and I've been around a lot of programs, not just North Carolina, is that he's so in control to the point where he never seems stressed. They have an organization there where everyone has their jobs, and Mac just kind of makes sure everyone does their job, and because of that, he's just not as stressed. He's not as hands-on, maybe, as a Saban might be. Mac trusts the people he puts around him, and decisions are made accordingly. Maybe Saban's a guy that has to look at every tape, and that might wear him out. Mac doesn't look at every tape. Mac has people that he brings in that look at tapes, and by the time it gets to him, it's been in front of you 8 sets of eyes before he ever sees it, so he doesn't have to roll up his sleeves and get super muddy in the portal or even with recruiting or with a lot of things. That's just the way he operates. He hates the term, and Chuck, I know you heard it before and probably said it, but the CEO thing,
yep.
I see him being a CEO of the program. He despises that term. But I actually think it's a compliment because he can be 72 and coaching and not as stressed as a Nick Saban was. This is why I think he can still coach another 4 or 5 years, because there's a certain pace he goes about it that isn't going to completely wear him out.
Not exaggerating at all. I have somebody that covers Texas and was there when Mac was there. He said, Chuck, there was a Saturday. He said, it's 15 minutes before kickoff. He says, I'm upstairs in the press box. He says, I look to my left. Mac Brown is standing there glad-handing people. He was like, then he turned around and got on the elevator and went back down to the field. He's like, it's 15 minutes before kickoff, and he's upstairs just hanging out being Mac. It is a definite different approach. A couple more minutes, Andrew Jones, Tar Heels Illustrated. All right, talk some blue sky. Talk some Max Johnson, because I was just talking DJU, and I'm like, folks, the guy who's played, like, there's no other, like, it's the equalizer. Well, what can it do to equalize for Max Johnson, or is the job even going to be his?
Well, yeah, I don't buy into these quarterback battles when you bring in a dude who's thrown 900 passes in the SEC, and as Mac always points out, only 12 interceptions, and have him actually battle Connor Harrell, who's a nice player, nice talent, but Mac needs to win right now. You're not going to roll the dice with Connor Harrell and not put Max Johnson out there. He's the quarterback. I think that they're changing the offense a little bit. They're going to be more run heavy. They have Amari Hampton, who could be the best running back in college football. And he can run inside, he can run outside, and he can now pass block too, so you can use him on all 3 downs without giving stuff away. And I think that Mac Brown really likes how Max Johnson can sort of manage the offense, a lot like his dad did. And Max Johnson scoffs at the idea of being game manager. He says he can throw the deep ball. He says he can make game-winning plays. He'll have that opportunity this year. But what they needed was, I think, to have an offensive approach where they're not so reliant on someone's arm, that over time teams pick up on stuff and they're able to stymie the offense a little bit. If you look at the last year, Sam Howell, the offense went down as the season went on. Yeah. If you look at last 2 years with Drake, they weren't as potent the last 4 weeks as they were earlier in the season. Teams picked up on tendencies. If you can line up and run the ball, and you can throw the short stuff and consistently move the chains, I think that's a lot more effective in week 10 than the approach they took with Drake sort of slinging it around. So I think that's the mission moving forward. They're going to look a little bit different. They might not be as potent. They might not light up the scoreboard as much, but they also might keep the defense off the field a little bit more, and that might be more of a winning formula than what they put forth the last 5 years.
Yeah, and there's a lot of contact on Drake, too. Flip that around, defense. Jeff Collins, here is what I will swear to people. And, folks, I mean, I saw it up close, Andrew. It was an absolute disaster, all caps, yeah, with him as head coach at Georgia Tech. I was like, folks, he's a really good defensive coach, and particularly linebackers and coordinators and Cruton and all that. I was like, it went as bad as it could as a head coach. I was like, pretty good DC, I think. Give me the expectation, the feel now with him there.
Yeah, I guess the selling point the program has had to make is to tell Carolina fans to forget what you saw when he was the head coach at Georgia Tech, because it was absolutely, like you said, it was a disaster. His first game was at Clemson, and I remember the ACC network was showing Georgia Tech guys lifting weights on the field before the game, yeah. And you knew not going to end well for Jeff Collins. So that doesn't make any sense. However, when you just give him a small tunnel to operate in, and that being running a defense, he's a different coach. And there's a lot of guys who are really good coordinators. Very few of them are really good head coaches. That's the way the thing works. And I think that they feel really good that they've got intensity on that side of the ball. Gene Chizik had a wonderful career, but I think at North Carolina, you need a coordinator on that side of the ball that will chew glass. Gene didn't chew glass. And I think you saw that with the defense. It wasn't as tough and as physical and gang tackling as it should be if you're going to achieve the goals that we were talking about at the outset of this interview. So I think Collins brings that. I also think he brings in a little bit more of an aggressive approach. They're going to go after the quarterback a little bit more risk reward instead of being too conservative and base like Gene was. And I think that's the right approach because the program needs vitality right now. And I think Jeff Collins brings a lot of that vitality.
All right, last thing. Honestly, I don't know how the Tar Heel collective fan base thought about, I don't know, Mike O'Kane or Dick Sheridan. Is there Dave Doran toilet paper being sold in Chapel Hill? Like, he's got to be, like, enemy number one. Has that rivalry, like, is it even to a new level now, given the comments and the aftermath and all that, or did that 100% blow over?
No, it's real, and I'll tell you how real it is. With NC State's run to the Final Four, it's funny because Doran said after they beat Carolina, he was on the set with the ACC network after the game, and he said, "We're a football school." And he was sort of scoffing at the idea of it's a basketball school, there's basketball history because they've won more in basketball. So the Carolina fans the last week have been doing a lot of stuff on social media, on our message boards, reminding Doran that they're a basketball school. They're in the Final Four. They've done more in the last 3 weeks of basketball than they've done in their history in football. And what's funny is he was actually at the regional final against Duke. I don't remember him ever going to a home game unless his team was going to be honored for something. So they're having a lot of fun poking at him through the basketball success. So, yeah, I think there's animus there. I think it's healthy. North Carolina fans in football need to get pissed off about something. They need to have a target to hate, and they've got him to hate. And I hope he sticks around forever because, A, he's good for NC State. It's good for the area and good for the league. And, B, I think it's good for North Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely it is. It almost legitimizes it. It's like, wait a minute, We've got a serious Darth Vader, black hat, whatever, just like all the other big rivalries, like Ohio State, Michigan, whatever. Andrew, I appreciate the expertise, man. Thanks for making some time today.
Always fun to enjoy, to hang out with you, man. Appreciate it.
All right, Andrew Jones, again, Tar Heel Illustrated. And so that's what you got there. And Chuck Amato, I don't know if Heath, do you have any insight? Like, I always liked Chuck Amato, and like literally chest out. I use that for Chuck Amato was chest out. Was that a thing with North Carolina? Because NC State was the class of that whole state. All like Duke and Wake and everybody, ECU, like NC State was the only program that was winning when Amato was there for the most part.
Yeah, there's still some history there with him and that area. He'll still pop back in sometimes, do podcasts and whatnot. Memorable character, Chuck Amato.
Yeah, and I never knew if North Carolina fans hated him. I never knew if, like, I don't know, Dick Sheridan back in the day. I mean, we didn't have the internet, so maybe we didn't hate people.
I don't think anybody holds grudges against Dick Sheridan or Mike O'Kane. Those guys were kind of, I think, blended into the woodwork. And, you know, that's the thing about North Carolina's football coaches, too, Chuck, is, you know, Mac, no one hates Mac Brown. You might not think Mac Brown is as good a coach as the reputation says he was. You know, Steve Spurrier famously referred to him as Mr. Football, and I don't think thinks a whole lot of Mac's X and O acumen, for example. But nobody dislikes Mac Brown on a personal level. Doran, the thing about him is he kind of relishes that idea of having a chip, being the underdog, being overlooked. Like, he leans into that. You get the feeling that that's that dude's persona, that if somehow he got the Texas job, he'd still be chapped and acting like people were doubting him somehow.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I will say this. There are folks that the hairstyle of choice is like supposed to be reflective of their mindset. Like, there's no other way Dave Doran's going to look in the mirror and say, all right, I'm high and tight and I'm ready to go. It absolutely is supposed to send a message. But you're right. He courts it. I think he does that at a lot of things. And it was the one instance, Heath, where he wasn't, according to him, trying to, and I believe this, by the way, he wasn't trying to court it. He says that was supposed to be private. That was supposed to be off air. It wasn't supposed to be one of those chest out moments. And because of that being Dave Doran's response, remember, Mac Brown said that wasn't an apology and I don't accept it. So whatever. Someone asked, did you get his apology? And he says, I got a message from him. Apparently Dave Doran left a voicemail. Was that it? The first time. And so it's bad blood, man. And you need this kind of stuff. It sort of legitimizes it. So appreciate Andrew coming on. We will break and continue next.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It is Thursday on the Chuck Oliver Show, and spring practice hither and yon. Most are still involved with it. Some of them, small number of teams will wrap it up this weekend. Then the next couple, everybody kind of gets done. Mike Norvell has quickly built a reputation. First of all, I want to say a great coach, but he's great at running a program. And we realize now Memphis was borrowing him. But Mike Norvell is, in particular, he's put together in a very short amount of time, because you could only have done this the past 3 years. In a very short amount of time, he has put together just a glittering resume in hitting the portal and bringing in kids. 1 year, maybe two, and they vault with their NFL standing. Saw it happen with an outside edge guy from Georgia, and he turns into a first-round pick. Saw it happen with a defensive end from Albany, and he's about to be a first-round pick. I think maybe number 8 overall, maybe number 7. I think we're going to see it maybe a year from now. Maybe. Marvin Jones Jr., quote from Mike Norvell, Marvin Jones is what we thought he was as far as athleticism and ability. There's a lot of growth still there, but he is what we thought he was. Now, if you don't know Marvin Jones Jr., kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hips, and boy, is he athletic, and he can get beyond the line of scrimmage, and he was sort of in line in Athens. And he played some. Now, I'm going to tell you one more thing. Coaches looked at Marvin. This was by folks who were there that said, the coaches looked at Marvin last August and said, Marvin, take this job. All right? You go out there and you take this job right now. Not the easiest thing to do in Athens. But Jamon Dumas Johnson, Butkus Award finalist, he's like, I'm going to go play somewhere else. Jermaine Johnson, I'm good enough to be the, 15th overall pick. To get a lot of snaps, I'm going to go play somewhere else. Marvin Jones Jr. said, I'm going to go play somewhere else. Now, he also sort of was being pushed along by the coaches. Come on, Marvin, get the job. And Marvin didn't. And so against that backdrop where you blink, you look the other way for a second and two freshmen pass you. It's Athens, so I get that. So there's a lot of context here. But Marvin didn't put a hammerlock on the job, and now he's in Tallahassee. But they are really excited about him. And when Mike Norvell says that, when he says we specifically target a guy and we have beliefs X, Y, and Z, Mike Norvell's about as good as anybody there is in college football at that. What's up, Heath?
Well, of course, we got legal stuff, Chuck, with the ACC and that Clemson and FSU. And in case anybody was under the impression that this stuff was going to get more highbrow in the near future, nah. Among other things, we've got from the North Carolina Business Court a filing by the ACC saying that a Clemson employee told a service processor that they were, quote, instructed not to accept anything this week while they were trying to serve a complaint to Clemson's president. So the ACC is upset because they're saying basically that the Clemson president is literally dodging service from the ACC.
Out the side door.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Leon County, FSU, has filed more documents today. Quote, the FSU board's contention is the entire ACC enterprise has failed, particularly as to its constitutionally committed to purposes, as well as the fact the captains who guided it have run the enterprise aground, plagued by conflicts of interest, motives of self-perpetuation, and the abject abandonment of their preeminent responsibility to serve the members first. Those commissioners have skippered the enterprise to its existential brink. I'm looking forward to later on this afternoon another filing saying, oh, yeah, well, you're duty heads. I mean, this is going to be a mess, Chuck. I mean, it's
you know what's coming next is somebody's going to get the receipts from whatever Jim Phillips was doing that Friday night before championship Saturday. So he was out drinking Grey Goose and having Southwest egg rolls instead of pimping his conference on every media. Like, they're going to find what he was spending his time on that Friday night when, what was it called? The abject abandonment of their responsibilities or duties to their members.
The failed enterprise. I mean, Chuck, this is the part I find hilarious. The ACC is making tons of money. Like, the way these two schools and the legal language is acting, you would think that the ACC is going the way of Photomart. The ACC is doing fine. It's just not doing as well as every single conference in college football, and FSU's mad about it. It is not in any way a quote-unquote failing enterprise. It's just that FSU has a whole different standard for what their definition is of success than a lot of the people taking part in the enterprise. But none of that was unknown when they signed these documents in the first place. It's not like it just became a revelation to FSU that Boston College and Wake Forest and Virginia might not have quite the same obsessive zeal for competing for every last football win or every last dollar the way they do. So, again, neither of us are attorneys. We're not pretending to be. It's just hilarious to see this. This is shocking. No, it's not. Everything about this is completely unsurprising. You're the big dogs in the ACC, but you're not making as much money for it, and so you want to do something else. It's not shocking in any way.
No. In fact, if you go back, this was the exact outcome you were after, including Florida State and Clemson, when Maryland left. Hey, let's have a new grant of rights where it makes this impossible to get out going forward. That's kind of what everybody set out to do, and it appears they were pretty successful.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Thursday on the Chuck Oliver Show, and we're talking college football as always. And if we're talking SEC, well, that includes the Texas Longhorns. Let's head way out west to talk to Joe Cook from Inside Texas. He is the managing editor and on 3 Thing. Joe, welcome to the program. How is your Thursday?
It's going great. I'm actually going to get to talk to some Texas players today, so I'm excited for that. And, you know, just going through spring ball. It's always nice to see some pads popping a little bit. We got a few opportunities, too, and a lot of excitement here in Austin about what the first season that SEC is going to be like for the Longhorns.
Yeah, and I think that's a well-placed excitement as well. Can we handle some old business first? I want to ask you about a couple of departing Longhorns. We bounce around, certainly in the SEC, talk to experts. With the draft coming up, there's always a few studs. And I want to ask you about a guy departing Texas who at least the reputation seems consistent. I'll say you won't have a hard time finding somebody that says Xavier Worthy, boy, he's fast, but the drops. Are the drops really that much of an issue, or is that just something we started to parrot from one person to another?
It was definitely a problem in 2022, but one thing, and I'm not sure why Steve Sarkisian chose to do this, but Xavier Worthy played the second half of 2022 with a broken hand.
did not report it. It was not reported by anybody. And he revealed that at a press conference about this time last year. And what was funny was, you know, he mentioned something about Arch Manning and, you know, how, yeah, they'll compete and stuff like that. And Adam Schefter tweets that out. Everybody else on the beat is more concerned about Xavier Worthy playing through the end of the season with a broken hand. So he was way, way more reliable in 2023, 1,000-yard receiver. Obviously, he's fast, as everybody saw. He's quick as well. He runs great routes. I'd say his biggest problem is obviously, you know, whatever comes with his size, but the NFL can work around that. It's just tracking deep balls. It was a little bit hit or miss for someone that Texas viewed as their deep threat. If he can improve there, I don't think anybody's going to be worried about Xavier Worthy's drops.
Okay, this guy that I just can't get enough of on the other side of the ball, Byron Murphy. There was an opinion that I thought was provocative at first, and then I thought about it, and I was like, no, maybe not. We're all locked in on Jared Verse and, you know, if Dallas Turner, whoever the first edge rusher is. There's an opinion out there that Byron Murphy may be the first defensive player off the board, that he's an interior guy, and we're all locked on the pass rusher, as we should be, but Byron Murphy may be the actual first player off the board. Talk about his potential as a tackle in the NFL.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who follow college football were obviously drawn to Tavondre Sweat. I mean, when you're 6'4" and 362 pounds, you're tough to move, and Tavondre Sweat no doubt had a great year, unanimous All-American and first team, in an Outland Trophy winner. But Murphy was, I think if you asked opposing coaches who had the game plan against the Longhorns, they were circling both, but they were probably emphasizing 90 over 93. Murphy, he showed, one of my favorite things about him is he showed up at Texas as a freshman with his associate's degree. So he had already done a lot. He's extremely mature in how he approaches not just the game, but everything. And, you know, what he lacks in size, he's right at 6 feet. He's right at 300 pounds. He'll probably play north of that in the league. But what he is just so strong. And to a man, when you ask Texas football players last year, it's like, who would you want on your side in a fight? He was pretty much the first pick. He's going to be great in the NFL as it, you know, continues to move toward a pass dominant league, because he was probably Texas' best pass rusher last year. And that includes their defensive ends and Tavondre Sweat. So I've seen him, you know, picked anywhere as high as 5 and not dropping basically any further than 18. And it should be a great reward for Murphy after going 3 and out at Texas.
All right, well, let's talk about who's still there, including a guy. He was my favorite mullet in a couple of decades, and then he got all adult. And then Quinn Ewers last year, somebody had asked me, said, who's the number one player you're looking forward to watching this year? And it just blurted. I said, Quinn Ewers. There is something about that's a fun-looking kid to watch play quarterback. And other than Dallas Turner fell on him, and then he fell weird and hurt himself again, if I'm remembering correctly, on a scramble last year or a run. But other than getting injured, take that out. Tell about the progression you've seen from a redshirt freshman who didn't play at all up in Seabus to a guy who's now back for his third year in Austin.
Yeah, he definitely showed signs during that freshman season that you would see on the high school field as a junior, that I can make any throw. I don't care where the defender is. I'm just going to throw it because I'm that good. And if you're in Columbus, if you're in Austin, you're not that good right away. So I think he's learned, you know, how to take the throws that are there. He's improved his deep ball accuracy. He's improved his command of the offense. And he's improved as a leader as well. He understands, to your point, that the best way for him to, you know, improve his NFL stock is to remain on the field. He's missed 5 games in the past 2 years. He was injured during his last season of high school. But he's also just, I think, taking a good approach to the season. He's been rushing his whole life is what the words he put it into. Between, you know, becoming this a high 5-star recruit at South Lake Carroll, skipping his senior season, then transferring to Texas, and then all these different things. He's taking this year to kind of slow down and enjoy it. while also working to improve on certain aspects of his game. One thing that I think is definitely worth tracking with Ewers is that Steve Sarkisian is going to be in his ear pending approval by this NCAA panel in a couple of weeks. Steve Sarkisian is going to be in his ear. And, you know, it's one thing to say, all right, Z right, go 36 slant, and hear that instead of having to, you know, look at a bunch of gyrating coaches. But it's another thing where Sark can say, you know, Z right, go 36 slant, watch the linebacker. He's gonna cheat. And if you have that type of thing, I think that's gonna open a lot of doors, not just for and you know a lot of different quarterbacks across college football, but I think it'll be a great benefit for Ewers as he enters what he hopes is his last year in Austin.
Okay, so like all the receivers are gone. At least all the receivers that someone outside of the program, the fan, the media, et cetera, would, you know, the casual person would know. Has Quinn become BFF with anybody who's still there?
That's the big question throughout this spring. They brought in, you know, I think a lot of people looked at the addition of Isaiah Bond, Matthew Golden, and Silas Bolden and said, oh, wow, you know, the rich get richer. Well, if they didn't bring in those transfer wide receivers, they would have had seven scholarship wide receivers, and all of them would have been first or second year players. So, yeah, were the necessary additions of a high quality, almost luxury quality? Of course, when you've got Isaiah Bond, who was one of Jalen Milroe's top targets, Matthew Golden, who succeeded at Houston, and then Silas Bolden, who was there at Oregon State. He'll show up in the summer. Bond has earned a lot of great praise, both from Sarkisian and from behind the scenes. But one of the returners, one of the guys who that Quinn threw to last year and is going to throw to this year is Jonte Cook. Was a five-star in the 2023 class from a power high school, power program in the South Dallas area in DeSoto. He is definitely one who, you know, sees these guys come in, understands why they come in, but he's motivated himself just to be able to prove that he's worthy of a wide receiver one billing. So this is going to be another very good receiver group. It's going to be a lot different than last year's, maybe not as segmented position-wise, guys who can move all over the field. But, yeah, building that rapport is the key, and that's what these practices and even the summer's for, and sounds like Quinn Ewers is up for the task.
Wrapping up, Joe Cook, Inside Texas, it's on three. So, Arch, talk about Arch Manning, because he didn't play really last year, and if things go to plan, he ain't going to play this year, Quinn is. Talk about Arch and his development and what the feeling inside the building is about Arch Manning.
I mean, they're super excited for the future of that quarterback position. Arch has been able to make a lot of plays here during the spring. I'm not sure if he's gotten very many reps with ones, aside from, you know, how many times backups tend to get their opportunities with the first team. But I like we talked about, Arch needs to be ready. Quinn Ewers has missed five games in the past two seasons. One, like you mentioned, was Dallas Turner falling down on him. One was an awkward fall on a scramble against Houston. But missing games is missing games. So Arch Manning stepped into the backup role at the end of last year once Malik Murphy was hurt and then transferred out to Duke. He's always been quarterback one, except for, you know, last year when he gets to Texas and then maybe a little bit to his surprise this year. But I think everybody understands the plan. I think he understands that playing time is on the table for him, not just this year, but going forward. There's a lot of excitement. There's excitement among the fans. Everybody who's kind of in this industry knows that Arch Manning mentions help pay the bills a little bit, but we're not going to force anything at Inside Texas. This is Quinn Ewers' team. It's his offense, and unless heaven forbid an injury happen, Arch Manning's going to be taking some snaps just when Texas is way out in front, and I think that's amenable to all involved.
All right, this last thing, this is going to be an off-the-field thing, but I just got to know before I can ask you the question, how long have you been paying attention to Texas football, whether fan, professionally, whatever?
Oh, man. So my dad went to Texas, so I've been going to games all my life.
Okay.
I always tell people – go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so you know Austin and the whole scene around there.
Absolutely.
The Georgia game, if you just drop that into a fishbowl, that's notable. And Austin does big things. Like, they do big events. The Georgia game on its own would be big. Is everybody aware that F1 is there that same weekend? And F1, they knocked the socks off of Las Vegas. So, like, if you can get Vegas's attention, that weekend has got to be already for the locals who know what's what. That's going to be an all-timer.
It for sure is. Luckily, unlike Vegas, they have an actual track and don't shut down the strip. But, yeah, I told our – we had some colleagues that on through to cover Georgia and Dogs HQ. And I think I texted him as soon as I saw that the SEC schedule put that on the same weekend. I'm like, you better buy your hotels now. And he texted right back and goes, don't worry, we're taking the RV. So if you're planning on going to the Texas-Georgia game, or if you're planning on going to the F1 race out at Circuit of the Americas, if you haven't bought in your hotel yet, you're going to be paying maybe a triple premium for a bed in Austin that weekend.
I got to tell you, I've been out there for Austin Wranglers games in the Arena League and had a blast. So I can't wait for that weekend coming up, I guess, in October. Brother, I appreciate you making some time today. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Joe Cook, Inside Texas, managing editor on Three. We're going to take a quick break. Come back. More of the Chuck Oliver Show next.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
He's got a ton of arm talent. He has unbelievable vision, and he can deliver the ball in a lot of different ways quickly. His big thing has been playing within the structure of the offense and understanding when to challenge a throw, right, and when not to. And that's been the big emphasis, right, is making sure, just from a do-your-job mentality and having tight feet. When Garrett has tight feet and he has his feet underneath of him, he makes really good decisions.
Reeling it in. For some reason, that's always been easier than convincing a guy to unwind it. That's what folks say who know. Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday. That's Joe Sloan. QB coach, OC, play caller, all these things with also, I guess, co with the wide receiver coach. At LSU, when he's talking about Garrett Nussmeier, and he said, recognizing when to take the shot, maybe, throttle down a little bit. That's the decision that you want to be working with, the one where the guy's a little aggressive and maybe, you don't have to take every shot. You'd rather it be that than somebody who check down. And it's not that they're worried about their stats, but it is all about high completion percentages, which are awesome. But it's also a bunch of 6 and 8 yard passes. I had a buddy of mine tell me he was watching a recruiting tape for a high school wide receiver. He said, Chuck, it was like 15 minutes of like 8 yard routes. That's all this. All he did, ran a slant, caught the ball. So you can, a lot of different approaches. At quarterback, do you know what I have to have? I've got to have somebody who changes games. And so the days of Jay Barker, I want to say at Alabama, Jay Barker finished, what was it, sixth or seventh maybe in the Heisman one year? It was 30 years ago. It was a different thing, what we wanted from our quarterback. You could hand the ball off, carry out your fake. And I only bring up Jay Barker because he was perfect as a college quarterback for like 1992. Hand the ball off, carry out your fake, don't turn it over, like, ever if you can. And a good way to never turn it over is you don't throw it a whole lot. So you would go back and look at different stats of guys and go, how did that guy he even start, and he was what? Ray Goff, I think, maybe finished sixth or seventh in the Heisman Trophy voting. Ray Goff, the former Georgia coach, was an option quarterback at Georgia in 1976. Go look at his season. I think it's Heisman. We got Heisman votes. It's way different today. You got to change the game. It's too much about it. And this isn't a 13-7 world. And not much. This isn't a, that's how we win games now. That's not really what it is. And so you've got to have a quarterback who can get out there and just keep it humming. All right, another possession. If you go back into old school SEC approaches, for sure. for sure. And this was everybody, I don't know, Pat Dye, Charlie back in the day. And I mean McClendon and Pell, that you could let the air out of the ball. You could get to the fourth quarter. In some cases, like Vince Dooley, he wouldn't mind getting to the final 5 minutes of the game. And then something will happen on defense or special teams. So that was kind of the mindset. And so what you needed from your quarterback was way different. The ability to just let it rip. And you've got that gene and that one brain cell, that wild hair saying, throw it. It's way easier if the guy's got that to kind of bring him back a little bit than it's someone who just doesn't take shots, who you're never, ever going to make plays with, because that's what you have to have, especially if you're at LSU. All right, what your goals are. Hey, what's up?
Chuck, do you remember the name Rashad Amos by any chance from the last few years?
As a running back.
That's correct. And at least according to the folks at 24/7 Sports right now, he is the number one available running back and the number two player available that is currently in the portal.
Now,
obviously, that will change in a couple of weeks. There'll be some more movement. But this is where I do wonder, Chuck, you know, this model, this idea that the transfer portal is going to be where you get your answers. I hadn't been keeping up with Rashad Amos, to be all that honest, ever since he left Columbia, South Carolina. I was over there working there at the time, as you know, and he was on the depth chart with the Gamecocks, but never really broken even the top three at South Carolina. Every now and then he'd get a carry, look like a decent back. It's not that I don't think Rashad Amos can play, but there was never anything that made you say, wow, Rashad Amos is special. Rashad Amos is a difference maker. Now, he's a guy that went and played a couple of years at Miami, Ohio in the MAC and ran for 1,000 yards last year. And so you've got them touting him as, hey, this right now, this is the second best player available in the country. You need somebody that can help you as a tailback. This is a guy you should grab. 13 touchdowns, 5.1 yards a carry, described as a power back with plenty of wiggle. I don't know, Chuck, you know, call me crazy. I watched this guy. I watched this guy in practice. I watched this guy in spring games, occasionally games. It's possible with more game experience, he's gotten a lot better in 2 years, but it's also possible he's just a player who's a really nice player for the MAC, and there's nothing wrong with being a really nice player in the MAC, but that doesn't mean put you in the SEC or the Big Ten, and you're going to do huge things. And, you know, according to this, Ole Miss, Arizona, Washington, Michigan State, K-State, Auburn, USC, like, all of them are supposedly at least expressing interest in trying to get him in or have made offers. I don't know. I still wonder, you remember how it used to be where there'd be a kid, if your school was recruiting kids and most of the kids they recruited were in-state kids, you know, or like if you were, say, an Auburn, maybe you're recruiting basically Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee. And then once in a while you'd find out, hey, the coaches are involved with some kid from Texas or some kid from Pennsylvania. And people get like more excited about that recruit because that guy was exotic. Wow, if we're going to Pennsylvania for this guy must be really good, you know? I feel like we're kind of there now with the transfer portal where there's just, ooh, this guy's exciting. This guy's a transfer. Look, somebody's going to obviously land him, and I hope he does great. It's nothing against Rashad Amos. I just have my doubts that some of these kids that are transferring that are getting built up are necessarily what they're going to be. Because I watched this dude firsthand. I did not see anything that made me say, boy, they should be getting him on the field a bunch more. They're screwing this up. This is an SEC-level starting tailback for sure, and they're just missing it.
Yeah, number one player, I guess I want to put the context running back in the portal right now. As you said, that's going to change in 12 days, but I do agree with you. It's someone who found an area to succeed. And 2 years earlier and a different set of circumstances, the SEC wasn't that setting. We already saw that. You grow, you get older as well. I mean, we all know the context there. But, yeah, this is not Quinshon Judkins going to Ohio State. I don't know. Henry Parrish going to Ole Miss, if that's the way it happens. That's an interesting ranking he gets there. And I wonder what kind of, again, just from a voyeuristic point of view, I wonder what kind of money is associated with that. Because running back and quarterback, we've been told on these airwaves that those are the two most overpaid, overvalued positions getting money from name, image, likeness. So wraps it up on a Thursday. Me, David, Heath, all back tomorrow.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon Background Screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.